I said I kind of ran out of time last time, so this shiur is kind of hashlamot. So the story of Tanusha Lachanai, found in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tet, and I discussed last time. I wanted to go through the sugya, and also I said I think there's some interesting connections in some ways to the reading in Brachot and Daf Kaf Zayin Kaf Chet. And through, both through theme and also through the people involved, specifically Rabbi Yeshua, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. Now, in terms of the Gemara of Tanur Shel Achnai, remember the story, right? There's an argument about the Tanur and the Tuma and the Tara, and Machlok Din Rabbi Elazar and the Rabbanan. So if we take a look at the first paragraph here, Tzran Hatam Chatzul Chulot Chul Ben Chulia L'Chulia, Rabbi Elazar Mitayer V'Chachamim Mitamin. So Rabbi Elazar was Matayra and the Chachamim were Tamin, Bizeu Tanur Shel Achnai, etc., etc., etc. And you remember, of course, Rabbi Elazar brought many kinds of signs or wonders to prove his point that the Tanur should be Tahor. And one oat was, of course, anyone remember? The jumping carrot tree. Right? And a second oat was, of course, the reversing aqueduct, the Amat HaMayim. And the third oat was the tilting walls of the Beit Midrash. And the fourth oat was the fourth one, the Batko, right? And Rabbi Yeshua, of course, said, Lo b'shamayimi. Okay. And then we switched scenes and we found that what was God doing in heaven at that time? Anybody remember what God was doing in heaven?
Smiling.
He was smiling. Kamachayech, he was smiling and saying, Nitzkuni banai, Nitzkuni banai. Now, those series of questions we raised about this sugya. One question was that we decided that we would like to understand the symbolism of the sugya, and it's ranged from the symbolism of the nachash, but more specifically the three symbols of the charuv, the amat hamayim, the tilting walls of the Beit Midrash, etc. So one question was the symbolism in the sugya. Another question that we raised, the second question, was there's obviously some sort of machloket between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua here. Rabbi Elazar thinks it's kind of okay to determine halacha through all these various symbols or signs or quasi-miraculous events. And Rabbi Yeshua obviously clearly objects, and that's eventually found in his statement, Lo b'shamayim hi, to the Bat Kol. And that was the second issue, one on the Sin of Machlok, and I think Ezra raised that. Now, a fourth question, which I think is also interesting, is to try to figure out what is the overarching theory of Lo b'shamayim hi, etc. Now, what we covered last time was this kind of popular approach, and I attributed it to Berkowitz as a kind of extreme form of the Rambam. The Rambam uses the Gemara to point out in numerous places that Torah is unchanging, that revelation has ended in some way, and there's no new revelation, and he employs this in his writings, describing the problem of Rabbi Sheker, etc. Berkowitz pointed out that it's not just that the Torah is immutable and unchanging, and revelation has ended, but in a deeper sense, God is outside of the halakhic process. And the popular formulation is that the halakhic process depends upon the autonomy of human reasoning. And therefore, any sort of divine input is out of the question. Okay, that was one interpretation. I showed you in the shiur last time that certainly Tosfot does not agree with that reading of the sugya. What I'd like to do today is briefly review Tosfot and then to show you the Marsha, which is a very different, interesting way of reading the sugya. To review the Tosfot, how did Tosfot work? Tosfot had the following problem. There are numerous sugyot in Shas, Erev and Yudgim Lamibet, Yevamot, something or another, I don't remember where, Yudal and Aleph, that's what the citation there is, which seem to accept the fact that Kein Mashkichim B'Bat Kol. And of course, the most prominent example of this is that in the famed Machlokot, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, the Bat Kol, you know, they argued for many, many years, and then eventually the Bat Kol rang out, and said, Zev is Zev Elokim Chaim, but Halach is Kebeit Hillel. Now, that means it's a stira. On the one hand, Sugeit Bava Metzia and Nuntet says, Ein Mashkichim B'Bat Kol, B'Shamayim Hi. The other Sugeot say, Kein Mashkichim B'Bat Kol, Kein B'Shamayim Hi, and you have here a contradiction or a stira. Many of you came up with kind of creative ways to get out of that by reinterpreting those Gemara Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, saying, oh no, they weren't really mean it, etc. That's not Tosfot's approach. Tosfot has two approaches. And it's worthwhile to review them inside. Again, let's take a look at source number 2 in Tosfot. Tosfot says, Lo b'shamayim, v'adam rapar kamedi v'amot, halacha. Oh, come on. It's like automatic. I start to give a shear. No one calls me the rest of the day. Hello? Yes, how are you here? Okay, can I talk to you a little bit later about it? Because right now I'm in the middle of giving a shiur. Is that okay? It's okay, it's fine. Okay, bye-bye. Sorry about that. So, tell us what it says there. His first answer is, wait a second, it's different contexts. Over there in Erevin, the Bat Kol comes to determine like Beit Hillel, where Beit Hillel is the Rov. The Bat Kol doesn't contradict any Psukim, right? It doesn't go against the Rov. What the Bat Kol does is that it's Machriya, it determines between Rov on the one hand, and Harif, the attribute of Beit Shammai, on the other hand. So therefore, that's why there's no contradiction. But Metzia, the Bat Kol is against explicit Pasuk, against Acher Rab Mahato, Bat Kol fails. But in Erev and Yevamot, Bat Kol is not against anything. In fact, it has Rov on its side and just helps to overwhelm Harif. Okay, that's the first answer to Tosfot. Second answer to Tosfot, more interesting, we pointed this out. Take a look inside again. Tosfot there says, Ba'od, third line, Dekan lo yatsa bat kol ele mishm kvodo derbi Elazar, shamin ha'shayim yochichu. It's not a real bat kol. It's just lefi lekvodo derbi Elazar. God didn't really mean it. Maybe that's why he was laughing later on. But in any case, it's not a real robot call. I.e., what's clear according to Tosfot is Kein Mashkichim Babat Kol. There is no exclusion of the divine voice from the halachic process. There is no autonomy of human reason. Fundamentally, Bat Kol is perfectly in. It happens to fail here for almost technical reasons, because it's a fake Bat Kol, God didn't really mean it, or because it's up against Rove, and Bat Kol versus Rove / Pasuk. Right? It's a pasuk, that's Acher Rabim L'Hatot. So Bat Kol can't beat the pasuk. It's God against himself, right? God once said Acher Rabim L'Hatot, and here the Rov says Tameh. So therefore he can't come now and say Bat Kol Tahor. So it's God versus God, and God 1 beats God 2. Don't take that out of context. Please, you over there, and the MP3 player. Okay. So, alright, good. So the question then became, and this I ended with last time, is if the sugi is not about sort of exclusion of the divine voice from the halakhic process, from Pesach Halakha, what is the sugi about? How should we read the sugi? And that was where we kind of left things. So what I would like to suggest is that the Mashal has a radically different interpretation of the sugi that he picks up on something very, very important. At the very least, it's a kind of stab and an attempt to understand the symbolism of the sugya, which we haven't really uncovered or unpacked until this point. So let's take a look at the Mashal inside. And the Mashal links up with our old friend in Chagiga Daf Gimel Amud Bet, the story of the Gemara of the Darvanot and the Aseas Nechakaf for Chaset. But let's look inside in source number 4. Mashal says as follows. Charuv ze yochiach, amat amayim yochiach, kotei beit ha-medrash yochichu. Your ebeze, klapei ma sh'amru v'per kamen l'chagiga, d'rei chachamim t'kidar v'onot, u'kumismarot netuim balei asufot. So it's connected to that Gemara. Right, we skip, we quote that whole Gemara, we should remember that Gemara. Right, let's go here. The second paragraph in source number 4. Let me divrehem. It emerges from the words of the Gemara over there in Chagiga. Elu the divrei. Pardon. Let me divrehem elu from these words. The divrei hametamin vametaren. Those over there who are metamein are metaher, and that's sugya in Chagiga. Kulam divrei elokim chayim hem. They're all the words of the living God. Dika tzad latameh betzad latahar latahar. There's always a tzad that could be tameh, could be tahar. This we discussed in the past. Elisha Torah natna lamata lahachria al pi harov. How do you decide between the differing voices where one says Tameh and one says Tahor? Especially if they're both Divrei Elohim Chayim, or they're both true in some sense, or whatever that means. The answer is the Hachra is al pi haro, dichtiv, achre rabim latot. And that's the Gemara b'Metzia. But al korchach siyem, kna lecha lev mevin lishmoa, v'chulei. If the Gemara there in Chagiga concluded, acquire for yourself an understanding heart, she'ein la'adam lahachria, a person can't decide, b'li netiya v'hachreat halev. A person can't decide without a tilting or a decision of the heart. Ach yishkol hadavar b'da'ato, he has to weigh the matter in his mind, levi havanato v'sichlo, according to his understanding, his intellect, terem shi'atel echad min etzdadim, before he tilts to one of the sides. V'al karchach amalei Rabbi Elazar, and even so Rabbi Elazar said, and therefore Rabbi Elazar said to them, Af shatem harabim. Now he's turning back to the sugya of Metzia. Even though you're the rabim, chacham, and want to say that it's tamei, hinei amru b'tznai acharei rabim lahatot v'gomer harabim kinetiyazu shehi paravirava. It's like this planting that is fruitful and multiplies. And this was one of the symbols from the Gemara in Chagiga as well. That the divrei Torah are parin v'ravin. They're fruitful and they multiply. Vahu Dalad Mem Vahu Demi Sheish Lalev Mevin. No, I'm not sure what that means. She Purav Ravavu. I don't remember. Sheish Lalev Mevin Lefrot Vilirvot Bechachma. The condition is to have a understanding heart that is fruitful and productive. B'chachma, with understanding. Aval hachrat harabim shalachem nigdihi. Your majority conclusion against me. K'netiyat hacharov. It's like the carob tree. She'en bo periyav revya. That it doesn't have reproduction or fruitfulness in it. Rak la'ayin shon. Just once in 7 years. Who oseh perot. It makes words with divrechem akurim. And your words are barren heim. K'charov hazeh. Like this carob tree, she'eno sahabe perot. A perot doesn't make many perot. We'll stop here. Now, what the Marsha just did was he attempted to connect our sugya in Bava Metzia Daf Nun Tet to the sugya in Chagiga Daf Gimel Amud Bet. It talks also about opening up your ears to the words of everybody. Elav elav divrei Elokim chayim. You have to, and everything is obviously the hachra will be according to Rov, but there's a condition for Hachra according to Rov, and that condition for Hachra according to Rov is Knei Lecha Lev Mevin, a kind of understanding or intuitive heart that involves Chachma. And effectively, what Rabbi Elazar is saying to the Chachamim, according to the Marsha, is that your Hachra'at HaRov does not involve a understanding heart that uses Chachma. Instead, it's kind of like this carob tree that is barren. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you think about it, sometimes in halakhic reasoning, you can be using a kind of understanding heart. You can be accessing some sort of intuition, some sort of deeper chachma. Or you can kind of be engaged in an abstract, barren, formalistic halakhic reasoning. And what the Marsha says that Rabbi Elazar is saying to the Chachamim is that your form of reasoning here isn't a manifestation of an understanding heart of true Chachma. Your form of reasoning here is just this kind of barren, formalistic reasoning, just like this carob tree is barren. And it doesn't lead to fruitfulness, it does not multiply, it does not lead to a kind of sense of Peruvu. In other words, the Marsha correlates here between a lot of different things, and claims this is what Rabbi Elazar is saying. One is the idea of the understanding in wise heart. Two is the connection between the understanding in wise heart and the notion of Divrei Torah Parin V'Ravin. They're fruitful and multiply in Chagiga Daf Gimel Amud Bet. Three is the idea that that's a condition that limits the hachra'a of Rov. Rov is not absolute. You only follow the Rov if the Rov has been done with this kind of understanding and wise heart that's parin ravin. Four, that's exactly Rabbi Elazar's accusation against the Chachamim, that your Rov is a kind of function of barren, formalistic, casuistic reasoning that doesn't have a lev mevin behind it, and therefore I'm not going to listen to your Rov in this case, and the sign of the carob tree is exactly that they are like the charuv. That's the claim of the Marshava Rabbi Elazar, which is very interesting. Okay. Comment? Okay, now, we go on and read the Marshava, we'll come back to this point in a bit more. Okay, so he goes on and says, near the end of the first paragraph, second paragraph, v'divrecham akrim him kicharub hazeh she'eno oseh harbe parot. It's like a barren, like this tree that doesn't make a lot of fruit. V'amalei ein mevin raya min acharuv. They say you can't bring a proof from the charuv. You can't bring a proof from the carob tree. Ki efsha she'akirato horatohu behipuch. Maybe it's moving shows exactly the opposite. The fishata mu'at. Maybe you're the minority. In other words, good, you move the carob tree, but ain't maybe in raya from the carob tree, because who says what the raya is supposed to be? Meaning your principle is correct, that you have to have a lay mevin of chachma that leads to piriyav reviyav chachma, and that has to undergird the principle of rogue. But your application of your principle is incorrect. Who says that your sign proves what you mean it to prove? Who says it proves something negative about us, the Rov, that we don't have the Leiv Mevin? Maybe it proves something negative about you, the minority, that you don't have the Leiv Mevin. So effectively, the statement of Ein Mevin Raya, Rabbi Yeshua, back to Rabbi Elazar, just says, you're right, but you're wrong anyway, because maybe the sign is about you and not about us. Okay, yafeh. Now we go on, and let's see how the Mashal reads the rest of it.
How does he do that if it's Rabbi Elazar who's bringing the proofs? He says, if I am right, the character will prove.
Listen, I'm going to put this in a funny way. I'm going to put this in a sarcastic way, without saying a serious way. The sarcastic way is, we already know in this Gemara God has a good sense of humor, because we see he laughs at the end of the sugya. So if God laughs at the end of the sugya, maybe there's something ironic going on here. But yes, he brings the sign that Rabbi Elazar wants, but he intends it to show something about Rabbi Elazar as opposed to about the Chachamim. That's one thing you could say, but I don't think that's really right. I think what's really right is there's a deep yisod here. Ein mevin raya. Yeah, it probably is about us and not about you. But you can't really prove that, can you? Maybe it's about you. Meaning we'll counter the accusation you're making against us, we'll throw right back at you. And you can't really prove by your proof. So as long as you can't really prove by your proof, we can throw back at you the accusation. Okay? Even though, of course, you're probably right that the proof is intended to prove like Rabbi Elazar, not a chachamim. Okay, so let's go on in the Marsha, because he has three more really interesting things to say. Because he's dealt with the charuv, but he's got to deal with the amat hamayim, and also with the kotlei beit midrash and the bat kol. Let's go on a bit further. Va'amalei, second, third paragraph. But now we got the principle, it just kind of applies the same kind of way of thinking. Va'amalei, amat hamayim yochiyach. The aqueduct will prove. Lafisha amru lahem, kfiat tshuva sheishiv lahem, sheish bechem harbe, you have a lot amongst you, amru asher lahem leiv leivin lehodot, ledivarai. You know, listen, you guys have, you know, you're right, you have understanding hearts, and there's many of you, you should admit, Rabbi Elazar says to Chachamim. Avo b'pnei ha-gaava, because of arrogance, ki kol echad meichem mitbayesh lachzor mitvarav. You're all afraid to, you're embarrassed to retreat, to change your minds. Ashek v'ahaya imo harabim, because you're already with the majority. V'al pima shamru perakamad etanet lamanim shlu divrei Torah lamayim. Why is water compared to divrei Torah? Words of Torah compared to water. Lomar lecha ma mayim enichin makom gavoa b'chulei. Just as water leaves a high place and descends to a low place. In other words, there's a famous statement of Chazal found in many places, you only find Divrei Torah amongst those who are humble. Why? Because Torah leaves a high place and flows downhill to a low place. So too Torah leaves a high place. Those who are haughty, those who inflate themselves, those who make themselves gavoa, you won't find the Torah there, you only find it in the low place, those who are humble, those who are shafel, those who are anav, etc. And this is the meaning of the comparison of Divrei Torah Lamayim. Just as water flows downhill, so too Torah is only found amongst the humble and the lowly, as opposed to the haughty and the arrogant. Now, let's read on a bit further. The Marsha says, Al Korach Amalei, fourth line, Hine Amat Tamayim Yochiach, the aqueduct shall prove. Shuho Lebe Emet Kefi Derach HaTorah Mimakom Gavol Lenamuch. it normally flows like the Derech HaTorah from the high place to the low place, because water can only flow downhill. An aqueduct works through gravity. This Amat HaMayim is going to go backwards to a high place. Exactly as you Chachamim are going backwards against the Torah. Because of your arrogance, you're, so to speak, flowing backwards. You're trying to go to a high place. You're found in a high place. Maybe it's turning backwards and showing about you, Rabbi Elazar, that you're the arrogant, haughty one. That you're the distorted one. Etc. So, the first accusation of Rabbi Elazar against the Chachamim is the Karev accusation, which is you don't have the Lev Mevin L'Chachma. You're engaging in a kind of barren, formalistic reasoning. They say, maybe you're right, maybe it's you who's doing that. The second accusation of the Amat HaMayim is effectively you're acting with haughtiness and arrogance, that even though you already know the truth, you're not willing to admit that you were wrong because you're the Rabbi. Right? And they say back to him, no, maybe you're right. Maybe you're the one who's acting with haughtiness and arrogance because you weren't willing to admit that you were right. What we see here, already in the Rosh Hashanah, we're going to conclude this in a few moments, is that this Gemara is not really about the inclusion or the exclusion of the divine voice. What the sugya is about, I would say, according to the Marsha, it's more about the ethics of debate or the ethics of discourse amongst Talmidei Chachamim and others. What kinds of midot are necessary to arrive at Torah truth? And that's what the conversation is back and forth between Rabbi Elazar and his protagonist, Rabbi Yeshua. So what is the proper ethics for Torah reasoning, or the ethics for debate, or the ethics for discourse in Torah? The midot, as opposed to any sort of metaphysical concept of his divine voice in or out of the Torah. Now let's go on a little bit further, which where the Rasha adds, the next two stages are a little bit more difficult for him, but here too he has some very interesting things to say. Let's take a look a little bit further. Flip the next side of the page, next paragraph. Now we get to the Kotlei Beit HaMidrash, the third sign. For Amalei, Kotlei Beit HaMidrash, who? Ki mihayadua, ki batei HaMidrashot, hu davar hechrechi l'Torah. Why did he bring a raya from the Divrei, from the Kotlei Beit HaMidrash? Because it's known that the Beit Midrash is a necessary thing for Torah. You can't have learning without a Beit Midrash. So the physical structure of the, now they're the virtual Beit Midrash, but back in the day, you know, you can't have learning without the Beit Midrash. So the physical structure of the Beit Midrash is necessary for Torah. Now we go on. The end of that first line on the second side. Ma'akach ha'mar lahem, l'fi da'at ha'rabim ha'nefula v'haduchuya shelechem. According to you guys, your fallen opinion, it's kind of a pun, hanufula v'haduchuya, and obviously wrong, shelechem, she'ena rak b'derach ha'kantor v'nitzuach. It is only, what is kintor v'nitzuach? How would you translate that, anyone? Kintor v'nitzuach? In a Beit Midrash, what happens in the Beit Midrash? You have the physical walls. What happens inside the four walls of the Beit Midrash? What happens is Milchamta Shel Torah. Now, say the word Milchamta Shel Torah in English. The Battle of Torah, right? Debate. You know, I'll tell you guys, it's very funny. This works perfect. You know, there's an election going on here in Gush Etzion. You guys are aware of this?
Yeah.
Can someone turn off that thing before I choke to death? It's cold still? What? No, there's this election going on in Gush Etzion. There's the incumbent assistant Rosh Moitza, and then there is the challenger. So it's been a very nasty, negative campaign. A lot of excitement, a lot of lashon hara, a lot of evil stories, really bad stuff going on. So it's horrible, actually. I'm not supposed to say that. But in any case, it was decided by Deborah Berkowitz, I believe, of all people, that it would be appropriate that there should be a debate between the candidates.
Of course.
So last Saturday night, there was a debate scheduled, and now there was this problem that there doesn't really exist a word for debate in Hebrew. So they were mefarsem the imut, between the Mu'amadim for Rosh the Moitza. And I pointed out to many of my friends that the word imut in Hebrew means confrontation or conflict. So in other words, in English it's called debate, but in Hebrew it's called a confrontation or a conflict. V'kacha z'haya. I wasn't there because I had a family thing, but that's what I heard. It was one big confrontation and conflict. So that says something that they don't have a word for debate. It's only a word for confrontation. The point being, in that any debate in the Beit Midrash, or in elections, or whatever the case is, it's easy to descend into hakintor v'hanitzuach, aggressiveness and argumentativeness for argumentative sake. It's the saying of anything for the sole purpose of winning. Because it's eyes on the prize and it's just about winning, so you'll say anything to win, whether you really, really mean it or you don't mean it, and at some point you don't believe in your position anymore, but just kind of argumentativeness for argumentativeness' sake, right? So, and you can think about it. On the one hand, there's honest, open debates where you truly attempt to convince you, to understand your own position and convince the other side. And then there's this kind of argumentativeness for argumentativeness' sake. And what the Rosh Mashiach says, She'eino rak b'derech hakintor v'nitzuach. It's just in the way of heatedness and victoriousness, i.e., argumentativeness for argumentative sake. She'eno amiti. It is not really real, is what Rabbi Elazar says to the Chachamim, your whole style of debate. And if so, if that's what our argument or our Milchamta Shel Torah is in the Beit Midrash, who even needs the Beit Midrash? Because that's not what the Beit Midrash is about. So that the walls of the Beit Midrash just collapse down onto us. She'eno amiti ra'ui she'gam ha'batei midrashot ein bahem tzorach ve'achrechi ra'ui lipol. There's no point to the Beit Midrash. The Beit Midrash is not a place for honest and open debate. If it becomes just a place for argumentativeness, for argumentativeness' sake, then there isn't even a point in the physical Beit Midrash, and that's what Rabbi Elazar accuses the Chachamim of in the third charge of Kotlei Beit Midrash. Va'amarle, and Rabbi Shua said back, in Talmidei Chachamim Menafchin v'chulei, if they're arguing, ki anitzuach amitin emar lefidat amitat alev shabal hanitzuach, the true argument comes from the internal authentic opinion of data amitit, the internal authentic opinion of the one who is engaged in debate. Va korchach atem mativchem, what are you doing here, you walls of Beit Midrash? Ki abate midrashot yamdu lulmod behem torah lachri lefidat rabim v'amru adayin matin. Period. Now, what is the response of the Chachamim? No! We're not engaged in argumentativeness for argumentativeness' sake, but this is our honest, authentic opinion. The Deha Amitit. And that's the response. Therefore, walls of the Beit Midrash, stay where you are, don't fall in, you're still necessary because the debate has to go on. And if the debate was an honest and real and open debate of real ideas, then what does it say in the Gemara there? In every generation, this is a little bit of a shtuch by the Masha. There are, in every generation, there are those who learn by the derech of aggressiveness and argumentativeness. There are those who learn according to the real battle, the real Milchamta Shel Torah, the authentic opinion that they really possess to argue for with an open mind. Gedat Rabbi Yeshua. In other words, issue three is argumentativeness versus honest opinion. Okay. And debate. And finally, the fourth one. Okay. What have we got so far? One, Havanat Halev in Chachma versus barren reasoning. Two, what was two? Arrogance. No, humility. Versus arrogance. Three, honest, authentic opinion and debate versus argumentativeness and aggressiveness just for victory's sake. Okay, those are the three dialectics or tensions that are set up here, where Rabbi Elazar makes these accusations of the Chachamim and Bishua defends by saying, oh, maybe it's true about you or it's not true about us, as the case may be. Now we get to the fourth. What about the Bakpo and Lobash Miami? How does this fit in? So here I think it's interesting, but Mashal doesn't spend too much time on it, but I think we can understand what he's trying to say here. And he goes on. Last line. Vishama Lobash Miami, and it says Lobash Miami, Vichain Ein Mashkichin Bi Batko, Hu Kifi Masha Amru, Lo Nitna HaTorah L'Malachei HaSharet, Val Korchach, Ein Lachria Rak HaOsek Ba. Okay, last one. What do you guys make of the last one? What does the last one mean? Can you fit it into, what is this idea of lo b'shamayim mi, lo nitna Torah l'malchei ha'sharet, ein mashgichim b'bat kol, rako osek ba? You would expect there's some sort of, I'll turn on the air conditioning, it's freezing. You would expect there's some sort of parallel to this whole set of tensions or dialectics, something that's parallel to this whole ethics of debate or discourse or midot that is being said here by the Rasha for Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Yeshua and Rabu. What's going on here? What do you think is the last line? Anyone? Yeah, Dobie.
Questioning their credibility as Tommy the Tahamim. And he's saying, Tony, those who are Oshek of the Torah. Meaning these guys aren't learning, they're just passing halacha.
Who's not passing halacha?
The group of Tahamim.
Well, that would be good if he said that, but he just calls down the Bachbol. And it's Dafka Rabbi Yeshua who says Lo B'Shamayim.
Oh, right.
And Rabbi Yeshua says Lo B'Shamayim, but here's the key. Yeah. Rabbi Yeshua says Lo B'Shamayim, what's he saying? Those malachim, or Hashem, or wherever the voice is coming from, right? They're not Lo Nitna Torah L'Malchei Ha'Sharet. They're not Osek B'Torah. And the Hachra'ah is only given to those who are Osek Ba. What does that mean? Yeah, I think it's trying to tell you, in some ways it's maybe a kind of a summation of everything that the Marsha has had, or Rabbi Yeshua was discussing previously, and that is that Talmud Torah and Hachra'a b'Torah, or debate in Torah, is a profoundly human endeavor. In other words, it's something that only a human being can do. The human being who has this issue of the Leiv Mevin B'Chachmah versus barren casuistic reasoning, or the human being who possesses this issue or faces this problem of humility versus arrogance, right? Or the human being who possesses this issue or faces this issue of what was the third one? Of honest, open debate versus aggressiveness and argumentativeness for argumentative sake. It's only human beings can be who face these challenges can be intimately involved in the halakhic reasoning process because it's a profoundly human endeavor. Lo nidna Torah l'malchei ha'sharet, and that's all that Lo b'shamayim means. It doesn't mean that the divine is outside of the halakhic process, but it means that there's a kind of priority to people who are osek b'Torah in deciding Torah. And that's the way the Marsha is reading this over here. Yeah.
The Bakal is like the kind of entity which represents something without a begam or whatever it is, whereas Rabbi Yeshua is admitting perhaps every single one of the things that Rabbi Lazar, and this is trying to, every single one of the things that Rabbi Lazar stated could perhaps be true amongst the Chachamim, but it doesn't matter because that's just built in. You're going to have people.
No, they're saying it's not. First of all, he said they weren't true of us, and given that they're not,
even if they are true, it doesn't make a difference. Is that the?
I don't think so. I don't think he's saying even if they are true, even if you were really right about us, doesn't make a difference. I think he's saying that in the end of the day, we, with all the possible errors we could possibly make, I don't think we're making those errors. And in the end of the day, we're the ones who are sikpo, and we have to accept upon ourselves as a rove to be machria, and we can't go by the Bakal to override our role, going back to Tosfot, right? In other words, yeah, the Bakal has a role, but at the end of the day, we are the role here, and to some extent, there's a kind of stay out of this, okay? What I'm trying to show you is that the sugya is about, at least going to the Masha, I said more about the ethics of the debate or the discourse, rather than any fundamental exclusion of the divine. It's not a fundamental exclusion, though certainly is a way of saying, oh, you're not part of the human story that's necessary for dealing with Torah Shabbat, right? But it doesn't mean you're completely out, right? I don't think it's going that far. Okay, now, just to finish up the Marsha, he has this really nice line about Netzchuni Banai. B'sha'amar gamke Netzchuni Banai, Netzchuni Banai at the end. B'lashon Kefel, it was said twice, Netzchuni Banai, Netzchuni Banai. Amakin ha'betat stadi. Heina metamin, heina metarin. In other words, Netzchuni Banai doesn't mean Hashem admitting that that he's out. When it's Chuni Banai, it's Chuni Banai means, oh, both sides in this debate, both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, are practicing the proper ethics of debate, or they have the proper midot, or they're acting properly, and therefore Harov Koveya. And that's the maskana of the Suga, according to the Mashal's way of reading. Meaning, if all of Rabbi Elazar's accusations against the Chachamim had been true, then indeed, the Rov would not be Koveya, and the Bat Kol would have been Koveya. But precisely because they weren't true, because both sides practice proper ethics of discourse or debate, that's why the Bat Kol is not Koveya here, that's why the Rov is Koveya, and that's what Nitzchuni Banai and Nitzchuni Banai means. Okay? According to the Marsha's way of reading things here. Okay, that's very, very interesting. Okay? And I would even say that Nitzchuni doesn't mean they're victorious against me. Remember I talked about this last time, Nitzchuni doesn't always mean battle. It can have the sense of conducting, to conduct something, La Meratzeach, in Tilin. So both sides of the Talmudic argument and the Beit Midrash have conducted things properly, conducted themselves according to the way things should work, and this has been Mesudar Kamosha Tzurech. This is exactly how it's supposed to work, and at the end of the day, therefore nothing overrides the way the process is supposed to work. Halacha Karov. That's the way to read the sugya according to the Marsha and Tosfot. Okay. So I would like to present this as an alternative to the Berkowitz reading, that the sugya is not really about the exclusion of the divine in the halacha process. It's rather, in a positive sense, about the norms of debate and discourse in halacha, and the fact that Hashem confirms that by saying Nitzchuni Banai and Nitzchuni Banai, both sides have conducted themselves properly, and therefore the rov is koveh as opposed to the bat kol. If, in some other story, maybe the bat kol could be koveh, but in this story, the bat kol doesn't koveh. Yeah.
But is this saying that the bat kol can never be koveh? If we have a proper debate. The only way that there's room for divine intervention is if both the sides are not doing what they should.
If we have a proper debate with Hachra of Rov, then the Bat Kol will not override the Rov.
So you take that with the first answer of Tosfot? Because in the Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, it's not like you've got to be a proper debate going on.
In the Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, I think there is the assumption is there is a proper debate. Beit Hillel is the Rov, but Beit Shammai was Charif. Since you had Rov versus Charif, you required the Bat Kol to be Machir like Beit Hillel. Right? So I think it works. But Tosfot's trying to say, and I think correctly, there's so many sugyot in Shas, that the Bat Kol is not completely out. Like the Bat Kol is just limited here because it's not real, or God didn't really intend it, or because it's not against Rov, etc. Right? That, I think, is the idea. But again, I want to mention is the positive focus of the sugya according to the Marsha, that it's about telling us how the debate is supposed to happen or not happen, as opposed to excluding the divine voice or anything like that. Okay, now, just interestingly enough, I just want to point out that I think the Marsha, even though it doesn't quote it, there's this great Gemara in another place that really supports the Marsha's way of reading the sugya. Take a look very briefly at Erev and Daf Nun Hayam and Aleph. What Rava said about Lo B'Shamayim Hi. Rava over there says, Rava Amar, Lo B'Shamayim Hi. Lo Timtsa B'Misha Magbiya Dato Alev K'Shamayim. You won't find Torah in the one who elevates himself regarding it like the heavens, in the arrogant one. Lo Timtsa Misha Marchiv Dato Alev K'Yam. Remember the rest of the Pasuk. Lo B'Shamayim Hi V'Lo Me'Ever Le'Yam. So one who raises himself up like the heavens, or one who expands himself like the Yam, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I know it all, you won't find Torah there. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo B'Shamayim Lo Timtsa B'Gasei Ruach V'Lo Me'Ever Le'Yam Lo Timtsa Lo B'Sachronim V'Lo B'Tagrim. Not traitors. But again, the idea is that there is a humility or an ethics that's necessary for true Torah knowledge. That's the fundamental idea of Lo B'Shamayim Hi in the sugya of Erevin, Daphne, and Hay. And the Mashal is expanding that and putting that into the sugya in Vamatiya Daphne and Tet. Now, I would like to make one last point, a third way to understand the sugya, which is not Berkowitz, not the Marsha, but maybe a certain kind of interesting combination of the two. And that takes us back to our old friend, Bracha Daf Kaf Zayin, and why I wrote here at the top, B'inyan Tanur Shalachnai, Torah Rabbi Yeshua. Okay? Who was Rabbi Yeshua? And what was maybe the most central formative experience he ever underwent? I would argue that's our story in Brachot. Do you remember, is Arvit a Rishut or a Chovah? So of course, Who said what? I don't remember. Let's look at it. Source number 7. Tan Rabbanan, Maaseh b'talmid echad shebal lefnei Rabbi Yeshua, Amar lo tefilat arvit reshut, O chava, Amar lo reshut. Yeah, he said it was reshut. Bal lefnei Rabban Gamliel. So Rabbi Yeshua held his reshut. Of course, Rabban Gamliel held what? That it was, Chaim, you remember? According to Rabban Gamliel, Marav is a chava. Okay? So the Talmud came to Rabbi Gamliel and said, oh, is it Rishut or Chova? He said, well, let's go and look inside. Balaf Rabbi Gamliel, Amalo Tilat Arvit Rishut or Chova, Amalo Chova, Amalo Balo Rabbi Shua, Amali Rishut, Rabbi Shua said Rishut, Amalo Hamtem Achikanzu Bali Trishin Lebet HaMidrash. Until the battlers, and Rashi tied this up with Bab Matiyah and Tet, the Bali Trishin or the battlers will come into the Beit Midrash for the debate or the argument. Now, what happened in Rabbi Gamliel's Beit Midrash? In Brachot Tav Kav Zayin. Let's read on. Amar HaShoel V'Sha'al, Tefilat Arvit V'Shut HaChovah. Amar lo Rabban Gamliel HaChovah. Amar lohem Rabban Gamliel HaChachamim, Kulmi Yesh Adam Shecholek B'Davar HaZeh. Is there anybody who disagrees with me? Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua, lo, no one agrees. Because no one is willing to disagree with Rabban Gamliel's authority. No one is willing to do that. Why not? Well, it's obvious what's going to happen later on. Didn't you, Rabbi Yeshua, say Rishut? Amar lehem Yeshua. Amorah, he didn't give you a chance to respond. Amorah aglacha. V'yeidu b'cha, they'll testify against you. Amar Rabbi Yeshua aglava amar. And we went through this whole story about the persecution of Rabbi Yeshua, the stifling of Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. He couldn't voice his opinion. He didn't even want to voice his opinion. He was so afraid to voice his opinion. And he was, the point was that debate in the court of Rabbi Gamliel was completely stifled. There was no debate. Up to the kach that Rabbi Yeshua was unwilling to even voice his opinion. And even though he didn't voice his opinion to disagree with authority, he was still persecuted for it, and he was still embarrassed in public. And all of this went on until Rabbi Gamliel was removed from his position. And after, remember, after Rabbi Gamliel was removed from his position, what happened? They opened up the Beit Midrash and they added 400 safsalim, and some say there was 700 safsalim added, etc., etc., etc. In other words, there was a way that things were done in the old days. And that was in the days of Rabbi Gamliel. Things were done by authority, by fiat, by control, by the stifling of dissent and debate. And that was the style of Rabbi Gamliel, the style of hierarchy and authority. Rabbi Yeshua played a key role in the change that occurred, where Rabbi Gamliel was removed. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was put in, at least temporarily, as the Nasi. And now, there were 700 new benches in the Beit Midrash. And everybody argued back and forth, and everybody debated back and forth, and they came to Hachra'ah al-Pi Rov. In other words, where do we see this picture of the new style? The picture of the new style is where? Bav Matiyah Daf Nun Tet. Where there's argument, and the Hachra is done al pi rov. And who is the one who defends the new system? The one who defends the new system is Rabbi Yeshua. Because effectively, what is Rabbi Elazar trying to do? Rabbi Elazar is trying to reinstitute on a certain plane rule by authority or rule by hierarchy. He might not be the Nasi who represents the tradition and can say, Kahazet Sarakliot, but he is the miracle worker who can bring God on his side. He's got divine authority on his side. It's even a kind of better authority than the prestige or the authority of the office of the Nasi. He could say, I can make the carob tree move, and I can make the Amat Amayim run backwards, and I can make the walls of the Beit Midrash tilt and almost threaten to kill you. So aren't I right? That's another kind of power, or another kind of authority. And that power or authority is what Rabbi Yeshua stands up against and says, there is no room for power or authority in the Beit Midrash. Rather, the Hachra'ah has to work through, and here the Mashiach is correct, through debate, and dissent, and Rov being Machriya, that debate and dissent. So you, Rabbi Elazar, might have a right to dissent, but the Hachra'ah is going to be through Rov. You don't have any right to bring kind of absolute authority or power to the table, whether it be the signs or the divine voice, or etc. Because that's just, and here's the subtext, that's just the style of Rabbi Gamliel. In other words, we see two sugyot where Rabbi Yeshua represents debate as opposed to authority and power as the proper means for determining halacha. One sugya is bracha kavzayat, and the other sugya is the famous sugya of Lobo Shemayimi, where that's the fact that Rabbi Shimon's response over and over to Rabbi Elazar. It can't be through power and authority, even the divine. It's got to be through the workings of the Beit Midrash, the descendant of the Beit and Nachra of Hero. Yeah.
Remember we mentioned that Rabbi Yeshua comes off as more of an antagonist. And like you even said, you mentioned at the beginning of the sugya, it says, Sheikhi Fudvarim Kachnazu, where it sounded like Rabbi Yeshua was imposing his opinion on the Elazar. In fact,
that
when we first read it, we thought like maybe Rabbi Yeshua wasn't getting them.
Okay, so this is whole. Yes, there's this whole complicated thing going on where Rabbi Yeshua is combating the authority or power that Rabbi Elazar tries to bring to the table, but at the same time, do they persecute the Dat Yachid too much and wind up committing the same sin, so to speak, or not? That's the Hamshech of the Sugya Bava Metziyah Daf Nun Tet. I think the answer is yes. Therefore, it's part of the Sugya Bava Nat Dvarim, and they abuse Rabbi Elazar in the end of the day, and people die. It has a very unpleasant ending, actually. People die, yeah. The same as remember back in Brachot, they were afraid that Rabbi Gamliel would get too upset, and Rabbi Akiva wouldn't be protected from the wrath of Rabbi Gamliel, and he might die because he doesn't have schut avot. So it tends to be that the person who loses the halach debate becomes upset and people die because of it. And it happens in Bava Metziyah and Ted, and Rashi was even connected between the two sugyot. That's beyond the scope of our discussion. But I would say again, Rabbi Yeshua is the anti-power authority figure, both in Brachot Kaf Zion and in Bava Metziyah and Ted. He is pro-open debate clearly in Brachot Kaf Zion, and in Bava Metziyah he's pro-rove as the machria. Okay, now these things are connected. Is there a problem in Bava Metziyah Nun Tet that at the end of the day they're makif oto ka'achnai and they persecute him too much for his attempt to use power and authority? Yes. Because power and authority is a very tricky game. Rabbi Gamliel errs and has to be chozer. Rabbi Elazar errs and Allah has lo kamoto. And even Rabbi Yeshua errs with the new rules of power and authority of Rove. Rove is another kind of power and authority that can easily become the tyranny of the majority against the Dat Yachid, which is the Hamshech of the Sugya Bava Metziyah. Okay? But, again, so let's just sum up here. There are really four interesting issues that bind some of these Sugya together that we've discussed today. One is the issue of the divine voice in an inner Adam and Halachic process that we've talked about extensively. A second interesting issue is the ethics of debate, ethics of discourse, the points that the Marsha made for us about understanding heart, about humility, about honest debate as opposed to argumentativeness, and also about the fundamental humanity or human experience that's part of the halakhic process. And that was the second interesting point. The third point was this issue of different types of power and authority that can come to bear in the halachic process, either the power of tradition and history, like that of Rabbi Gamliel of his yichus and his office of nasi, or the power and authority of miracles or charismatic acts, or the divine voice of Elazar tried to bring into play, or alternatively, even the power and authority of the rove, which is also another form of power and authority, right? And the thread that runs through this is apparently the Beit Midrash has to work in certain ways where it doesn't err in the direction of power and authority. And if the Beit Midrash errs too much in the direction of power and authority, then something's problematic. Rabbi Gamliel is a problem, or Rabbi Elazar is a problem, or maybe even Rabbi Yeshua and his cohorts using rule were a problem because they wind up being over and not Torah. So that's the interesting tension that exists throughout that unites these sugyot in an interesting way. Okay. That's it. This sugya of Tanur Shulchanai is a very important sugya. I think everything's a sugya. That's it, we stop here. Next time, back to Brachot on Kaf Chet we're on to. Okay.
Reference to one another, or does this keep going through all these
things? I don't remember. Actually,
I
think it's cool
too.
All right, now we turn this thing off. This is you. Who's supposed to take this?
I'm supposed to take it.
It was off.
It was off the entire time.
I think so.
Turn off the entire time.
No, record it. Still going. Cool.
So every time I teach this stuff, it comes out different. Never, the last part that I said now, I never said that before.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I never really get connected to Brooklyn before either. I always sort of said that. I only realized the whole thing about the connections of Yeshua recently.
Defining the shitot of these different guys in Shas. Does it affect their halachic opinions at all? Do you try to do that or not?
That's
very much. I mean, but especially here, because this is like very crucial in terms of how they.
You can speculate about that kind of thing, improve anything, really. And you can say there's a certain tfisa or a certain worldview, there's certain issues that Chazal and the post-Korban era were very concerned with. And that's what I'm trying to do here. And I can say that there is an overall perspective that emerges here. Now, by the way, you should also realize that in even combat, much of what I said here has a lot of application to issues of how Pesach should work, even nowadays. I think one of the great errors of the Haredi world is, again, they're just straight up Ramgala. The Gedolim said this, that Posek Ador said this, and tradition. Right.
I mean, there are authorities like Rabbi Nutan during his time. People are hoisted up.
Yes, Yachid Bedor, but it's very, very important what he says. But
there was debate.
Right. The majority disagreed.
Right.
No. It's bizarre. It's weird. And like. It's just we take it so for granted.
Oh, when did
we
that
take it so for granted that the Gadol has paskind about, so we said, okay, so can we find the Gadol who is of equal stature who thinks something else? Well, that's the only possible.
That's what people are talking about now. I mean,
that's the only possible way that the game is supposed to work. I don't know.
When does that
seem like is that way to
when did that culture begin, though?
I don't know. I'm not a historian. I don't know. But it seems to me when you look at... obviously, you have to limit the judge. Obviously, you have to make a good argument. Right? And obviously, the Achra is according to Rove, right? But the idea that we have no opinion and we won't go with any sort of notion of what conventional wisdom is, we'll just ask this one guy.
And do you have a Gemara to where you have like the... not even like the Joe Schmo coming in, like the not even the Talmid Chacham. Not because I'm going to the.
No.
I'm taking the theme and moving back.
Rove doesn't apply. You can't go too far.
Right.
You require.
You need the Beit Hillel, the people who made it in there.
You need some group of people who are learned. Right. The notion of the group of people who are learned, that one. Yeah, you find lines in the Gemara, Yachid Bidoro, Halach Kamota B'chom Makom. You find this, right? But that's a way of thinking. But you also find not that way. So it's very.
Like I just learned the Mishnah in Eidiyot, like right in the beginning, where Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai both say like something, and then the third group comes. These people from like the Shar Hashpot, these nobodies come, and they give their edut that this is really what Shmaya and Avtalion said.
Well, that's
a little different
because
that's testifying to what the
that's living out of his edut. That's a different story. Yeah. That's not what we're talking about here. But certainly we can agree that this is in the Pesach nowadays works for any sort of sense of like. Now we don't know how that would work, because in the virtual world,
next question, right? Okay.
No, it already goes back to the medieval times, the Gaonim, that once you didn't have like, if you would send a shayla to the Gadol in such a place, you've had this for a long, long time, but it seems to me like it's a lot of whack now. That's what strikes me.
I mean, the second you have the concept of like a rov in a community, right? Isn't that whole rov idea? It's a very It's a very Sanhedrin-based Judaism type of idea, or
should work based upon rules. There should be debate in Hafra. I don't know. So and so said, that's it, and I follow so and so. I guess I'm more attacking the mindset of so and so said, and therefore I attack. I hold by so and so. We do it too. Oh, for Francis, it's okay. All the people hold this last year to go to college. For Francis, it's okay, right? Or all of this, you know, we do it also, right? We all do it, but in a different way.
It's more exciting that way.
That's it's very important to us, because we think that would be in big trouble.
It was,
I remember when I was young, I never had a cousin Tomo. But I had.
I love how people
did. I didn't have cousin Tomo, but I had Haredi friends. I had a Haredi friend who was. He was a lapsed Haredi who became re Haredized. A guy from Muncie. And I met him playing basketball here in Israel somewhere, actually. And he was tough, smart, he was tough. And he really pressed me. But then in the end of the day, he admitted, okay, yeah, you have a Masorah that you follow. A series of Das Yachids, but that's okay. At least you have a Rebbe, who was a Rebbe, so it's okay. But him, and he points to a friend of mine who like had these crazy ideas, like, hey, forget about it, he has no Masorah.
There's one of the points that Rav Simcha made yesterday, right? And he's like, look at these little pop shots like this. He's like, Gush, everything has to be Chadshani. Nobody reads Rashi, they want to get the Pshat, and then see if Rashi fits into their Pshat. The whole idea is about getting the new creative. This is what he was saying. It was interesting. Like
Alibi,
said,
that was true.
Right.
He knows from a very different tool than his perspective.
Yeah. His perspective was.
Did he tell you his story? Did he tell you his story of his shiver when he first broke?
You mean he said, like, these were little steps? There was one climax?
Yeah, I think there was one. That he used to, that we always used to talk about, he used to tell us, you know, he used to come out, he told me once. He told me this 17 and a half years ago, when Michelle was pregnant with Aviva. So I started work that year after Chagim. Like really early. So I came for Rosh Hashanah. I had 10 days. I came to Yeshiva for 10 days from before Rosh Hashanah. To like everyone before, I was Sacha Kol 27. It was like amazing. The best thing. So like I knew some older guys. So actually, whatever. Met a lot of people. I hung out with the guys. I didn't leave Yeshiva for 10 days. I went to the Kotel once. That was it. I sat and I prepared. Must have been like 2-3 months of shiur in the 10 days I was here. It was great. So, Simi talked to me a lot. During those 10 days,
he was going through seven.
I don't know. I think so. And one of the things he told me, he had a coal apartment here. And he said he was married at the time. He says, you know, he built one of these coal apartment type sukkahs where you just put like one, my persona almost fully sukkah. So you put one beam here and good asik here and love it here, whatever it was. And basically, he was sitting there. With open walls and it was a kosher sukkah. And he sat in the sukkah. He didn't feel like he was in a sukkah. So he didn't feel like it was a sukkah. Because he had no walls around him.
That always keeps you stories. Right. Yeah.
So he went to Rabbi and he told this story to Rabbi. And he said, Rabbi, I built a sukkah based upon this and that, etc. And his kosher sukkah is pretty sure I checked. But I had a real problem that I didn't have the chavaya of being in the sukkah. I didn't believe it was really a sukkah. So he doesn't like that. Rosen told him. If so. And he says, I know the Rebbe says halacha, you have to see the world with your eyes, halacha, etc. But I just didn't see it, I didn't feel it. This is it. No problem.
That's the Rebbe
said? Yeah. If you didn't see it, you have a problem. And Simi said at the time, he says, well, he told me the story. The Rebbe told me I had a concern in the Muna. Which I don't know, because I doubt Olsen said that. But I always, I did not see Simi for many years. It was only later on, when people told me, oh, you know what happened to him? You know, he became a breastfeeder, etc., etc., etc. And I said to myself, uh-huh.
There are a few. You had very similar, you had similar esque stories.
Yeah, those are the kinds of things.
Looking for something else now, but that's a sense.
Yeah. It was just the point is that a different kind of kavaya.
I mean, I asked you yesterday.
Well, he was a
highly enthusiastic.
The energy was definitely there.
He was a highly enthusiastic person. He was like to make her up about it. Hey, you just went back to America, stay with the army, stay with the military.
You're on trouble with
that. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't worry.
Okay, yada.
Where am I?
Okay, came first.
Yeah.
Anybody?
This is from the room. Is it?
I don't know how to turn this on. Anybody know how to turn this on?
It's still recording, Dobie.
What?
It's still recording.
Oh, really? Also, this conversation.
It's locked. Why is it locked? Oh, there we go.
I don't know.
That's why.
Okay.